Joining me today is Tyler Funk. He is the director and co-producer of the documentary Anything for Fame. And he's here today to talk about the film and the inspiration behind it. Welcome, Tyler.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
Yes. No, the film Anything for Fame, was there another title or was this one that just came just like that?
Yeah, honestly, I can't even remember. But yeah, as soon as we started pitching it, that was the title. And it just seemed to capture exactly what we were looking for in the stories we were looking to tell.
Yes. Congratulations, Tyler, by the way. And how has the feedback been like so far?
Yeah, people have seemed to really, really connected with the film. And, you know, I love hearing the feedback. The film is multi-protagonist. We cover 5 different content creators. And I think each person watching the film has a little bit of a different experience based on their relationship with the internet. And so we've heard some amazing feedback of, you know, characters that people love, characters people hate. And that really depends on the viewer. But it's starting these amazing conversations. And it seems to be a film that people keep talking about. You know, I get people messaging me weeks after they've watched it, asking more questions. And as a filmmaker, that's what you love to see.
Yes. And is there a specific demographic or just like all ages, really?
Yeah. You know, I think Anything for Fame really is probably more so for people kind of 35 and up, kind of, you know, the generation that lived both before and after the internet. I think if you're in that world where you've always existed on the internet and always been in social media, the film, you know, we've had as young as 13-year-olds watch the film and say they love it. But I think it's more of a look at like what's going on. And depending on who you are and how knowledgeable you are about what's going on, I think there's different levels. But I think that the primary audience to me would be people that are aware of influencers, but maybe aren't sure exactly why they're doing what they're doing or what really goes on.
Yes, and you know, define fame, like what are the levels, you know, really to get attention or is it to make money or hoping to get money as an influencer?
Yeah, you know, I think the best definition that we came across when researching this film for fame is to think of it as a currency. It's a currency that can be spent. When you have fame, you get access to certain places. But very much like money, it runs out and it doesn't last forever. And you can't necessarily, you know, always get more of it as easily. And you can get a lot of it very quickly, but that doesn't mean it's going to stick around. And so I really think of fame as a currency. I think internet fame is a more volatile currency than, say, traditional Hollywood fame, which, you know, has more gatekeepers in place and more people around you and more of an industry protecting you. Where really with online fame now, you can go famous for anything. You can create your own genre of content that didn't exist before. And that can be a whole new avenue. And you know, we saw that with certain creators really pushing the envelope of what is or isn't entertainment.
Yes, and you know, it's the platform can control you, or it's best if you can control the platform because it can get really overwhelming and too much time spent or trying to create content and, you know, maybe taking risk. Because the film was, I felt it was very, had such a great message. And Tyler, could you please, you know, explain that?
For sure. You know, we kind of talk about in the film a little bit as fame also as relevance and that importance that we all have to feel relevant. And, you know, I think it's a very human thing to desire fame and attention. And it's not at all a behavior that we should be ashamed of, but we should be asking, what's that about? Why do I feel the need to have this fame or attention? And can I get that from the people around me? Can I connect closer with my friends and family? Or do I need to get it from strangers across the world? And what does that do when you try and chase people around the world to get that fame? It's a very different pressure, and it's gonna put you in a lot of situations to do things that you might not do if you were hanging out with your friends and family. You know, the conversations that we see on X or Instagram or TikTok are very different than people would ever say person to person. And we lose a little bit of humanity, I think, sometimes when we don't see a face there and we're kind of just shouting at each other.
Yes, and I mean, there are so many platforms now. I mean, there's TikTok, there's Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, but is there a favorite one for, or best one, I should say, for a content creator, or does it depend?
Yeah, I think any content creator, I think you need to ask why you're doing it. What is the end goal, right? And I think there's very different rewards in each platform. I would say, for example, you know, YouTube, if you can get to monetizing, has the best pay for creating content, but you need to have kind of more long form content to really exist in that ecosystem. TikTok, you're gonna get a lot more views really fast. Like you'll see in our film, Jake Hillhouse, one of our creators, had over 2 million followers. You know, he's hitting views on each TikTok that are the same as Stanley Cup finals, right? But he didn't make a penny, like not a single cent from the platform. And so again, it's, you know, are you trying to sell your brand? Are you trying to get eyes on you? There's different rewards each platform offers. And it takes a little bit of research to really understand those. I think the platforms aren't super forward really explaining to content creators what they may or not may not be able to accomplish.
Yeah, so you know, I introduced you at the beginning, and what was the inspiration behind this film? Was it something, you know, your own experience, or what drew you to do this film?
Yeah, so it was a very personal experience. I grew up in a small town with a small group of friends, and we all wanted to move to Vancouver and make movies. And that was the goal from grade six onwards. And I actually co-created this film with a friend from grade two, Sebastian Mercado. He was the editor and co-producer on the project. So we've always worked together. We had another friend, Dave, who was an actor. And he would always do the most outlandish, crazy things to get attention. There's no way he would not be the center of attention wherever we go. He was a classic performer in that sense. While we were at film school, unfortunately, David took his own life. And it was a big shock and a really big thing for us to process. And it's taken a long time for all of us to work through. But to me, that was a big reminder of this fine line of looking for attention and a call for help. And so when I started seeing a lot of the similar behavior from content creators online of breaking societal norms, as Dave would always do, I started asking, who are they? What's going on? Why are they doing this? Are they breaking societal norms in a cry for help? And I think some characters in our film are definitely doing that. Or are other ones breaking the societal norms because they know that's the best way to go viral and the quickest way to move up the TikTok algorithm? So I had a genuine curiosity of what was going on, what we were seeing with this next generation of content creators. And we wanted to hear from their stories. And so that's really where the idea started from.
Yes, no, thank you for sharing, Tyler. And like, how much research was involved? Like, how did you find the content creators?
Yeah, so it was a huge process. You know, I think there's so many different ways to make a documentary. I think sometimes people, you know, arrive at a documentary, and probably the smarter way to do it is someone has a full story and then you say, we're going to film it. We were very much researching this, and, you know, social media changes so fast. You know, at the beginning of this project, TikTok wasn't even around. But, you know, we've been researching different platforms. I'd had a series that had gone viral on Vine back in the day. So I was very familiar with the rise and fall of different platforms. So we actually interviewed and reached out to over 250 content creators. And really specifically, you know, we were always looking at like who is pushing the limits, who is doing this for fame and breaking some rules. You know, and then from that we funneled down and we filmed with about 25 of those content creators, and then about 5 of them kind of made the final film.
That's wonderful. And who is involved in the film? You have the National Film Board. Yes, please tell us.
Yeah, so the film was funded by the National Film Board and the TELUS Fund, and both absolutely amazing organizations. The TELUS Fund has done so much, I think, for funding health and wellness content. And I've worked with them for a few years. You know, we created a series with Jan Arden on caregiving and a bunch of other projects throughout the years. And so they're doing really interesting stuff. And then obviously the NFB is such an honor to work with, just such a legacy in documentary filmmaking. And, you know, we couldn't think of more exciting partners to do our first documentary with. So for us, it was a no-brainer to take the project to the National Film Board and see if they'd be willing to go on the journey with us.
Yes, and how does it feel to have the documentary on the big screen and it's live streamed on the National Film Board? Like, how does it feel now that it's there and it's for you to look at and everybody else to, you know, get a message?
Yeah, it's wonderful. You know, it's always people watching your film, and I love hearing from everyone. We've been getting some great tweets and comments and emails, and you know, we've had live screenings and great feedback. And And that's always a really amazing part of the process. But of course, as a filmmaker, I'm also, you know, we almost finished it a year ago. We're also busy working on our next projects because it never ends, right? I never think it's just one film. And so we're working on a bunch of other stuff. And I'm very excited, though, that Anything for Fame is now out there and people are getting a taste of it.
Yes. Will there be another one like Anything for Fame 2 or?
Yeah. I mean, I would love to do even just like a short doc in 10 years to follow up from everyone. Like, I think that would be awesome because they've all gone on such amazing journeys so far. And, they're, you know, the content creators are all so young. That'll be really interesting to see what they all do next. Throughout their lives. But yeah, we're working on a bunch of different stories within the content creator influencer space. You know, obviously from that 250 interviews, there's so many amazing stories. There's so many stories that were fascinating, but they weren't a fit for this project. And so we're really just continuing with a lot of conversations and seeing what kind of gets us excited and what makes us want to get out of bed and go tell another story.
Oh, I love that. And what do you want people to take away from the film?
You know, I think a lot of people have very preconceived notions about influencers and content creators. I think there's a little bit of pearl clutching even of, you know, the next generation is so terrible. And I hope that people watch the film and understand a little bit more of what the content creators are going through. And that also them as viewers are what encourages a lot of this behavior, right? Like I don't think you're gonna see a lot of the kind of stuff that people love to hate on for social media influencers if people weren't watching, you know? And it's kind of that classic thing of everyone claims to be watching cat videos online, but if they were, we wouldn't have this world of influencers. You know, there's also a lot of eyeballs in the attention economy going to this type of content. And I think there needs to be a bit more work done and ownership by viewers to say, hey, if this is the internet I truly want, I can participate. I can create the content that I think is good, which is amazing. You know, it's an amazing gift that we have. But they can also, you know, choose to watch and subscribe, you know, and I think eventually, yeah, I just think more empathy will lead to better content creation and overall a better internet for all of us.
Yes. And what I took from the documentary, if I may say, is where the journey, you know, with the parents, you take us along this journey and it's just like, they're growing and you see the parents, generally speaking, coming around, and it is really, you feel for the characters or for the influencers, and I think you struck it, like you aced it, if I may say, Tyler. No, I think it's a educational documentary and entertaining as well. But you have to see it. For those who have not seen it, you have to see the film. And I know you mentioned that you're working on other projects. So what is next for you, Tyler? Can you share?
I can't yet, unfortunately. Just the nature of some of the projects. Okay. We just need to stuff like that. I wish I could. But yeah, again, like I think a goal Sebastian and I have within the documentary world is to create extremely entertaining documentaries. And I think there's a way to create entertaining documentaries that are not exploitative, that are not reality TV, that can still be very educational. And I think that's where we're very excited about Anything for Fame. I think it walks that nice fine line of it's, you know, I think we saw some review online where someone said it was one of the most entertaining docs they'd ever seen. And that's the goal, right? We want the audience to really enjoy the ride. And I never want my films to feel like I'm lecturing or telling the audience how to feel. We want to take you on a wild ride to a different world and then let you make your judgment of how you feel about that.
Yeah, that's wonderful. And where can people see the documentary?
Yeah, so the film is available on Paramount Plus in Canada, France, New Zealand, Australia, and Germany. It's going to be out on cable TV in Spain for Canada, which is probably most of your viewers. It's available for free on the nfb.ca. Or if you have a subscription to Paramount Plus, you can watch it there. Same copy of the film. So both great spots to check it out.
Yeah, so you know, Tyler, one thing to know, will it be translated in other languages?
I believe it is for those other markets. I don't know if you have any of your viewers in France or Germany, let us know. Get back to us. I believe it is, but I have not seen those copies yet.
Yes. And so people want to reach out to you. Where can we go, Tyler?
For sure. Yeah. I think a great place to find me is either Instagram. My Instagram is like very much just my personal Instagram. I post a little bit about the film, but I don't actually promote that much on the platform, but it's a great way to message me. I mainly use it as a messaging app or on X or Twitter. You can message me there. Or just, you know, my production company is northofnow.ca. And that's where all the business kind of emails come in.
Yes. And is there anything else you'd like to add?
No, I'm grateful for you taking the time and being on here with. It's great to meet you.
Yes. And likewise, Tyler, and congratulations.
Well, thank you. And thank you so much for taking the time to watch it. And I'm sure I'll see you around Vancouver.
Yes. Thank you again. Hello, everyone. I'm Christine Blanchet, the TV host and producer of The Closing Act, News and Entertainment, and I'm thrilled to have with me today two special guests who are the showrunners of the pop culture web series The Drop, airing on YouTube, and they're also actors, so I don't know how they do it, but they're here, and they're going to talk about their work and how you can watch the program. So welcome, and introduce yourselves. And I already said you're actress producers, but introduce yourselves.
Oh man, okay, well, I'll go first. I'm Danny Pagliarello. I'm an award-winning director and actor and co-creator of The Drop with Aisha. And I live in Toronto. The second T is silent for everyone out there on the West Coast. And yeah, I'm just really excited to be here today.
Well, welcome, you know, and congratulations to you for the web series. And it's actually, you know, you're being featured at festivals worldwide, correct?
Yeah. It's been exciting. Also, hi. Oops, sorry. Should I say hi?
Yes, go off.
Hi, my name is Aisha Evelina, and I am a writer, director, actor. And the co-creator to Danny and we worked on The Drop. And I too am based in Toronto. The T is silent, and I love raccoons.
Raccoons? Why?
I don't. I really don't. I think the most Toronto thing that I could say is, like, other than talk about Drake, is raccoons. So
I agree. I think we really wanted to have a raccoon, like, in the show, but we just couldn't, like, afford the animal handler. They're surprisingly expensive, but raccoons are just all over the city of Toronto. They're
our
little friends, you know?
Yeah.
Well, you are both multi-talented, and, you know, again, congratulations on the web series. It's, featuring at festivals worldwide, as I said, but I want to ask you, is this the first time working together?
It is, professional level, though we've known each other since our university days.
Yeah. We went to theater school together, so we went to York. actually, Danny, I'm not sure if you remember, like, the last time we actually worked together prior to The Drop, we were doing this, like, movement thing. Do you remember we had to be animals? Do you remember that at all?
I mean, that was all 4 years of university for me, just pretending to be an animal. So, like, yeah, I can't remember specifically which time, but I'm sure that probably was the last time we, like, had an assignment or something. Yes.
Yeah. So, like, it is the first time professionally, but the last time I remember working with Danny, we were doing, like, a movement thing in theater school, and we were both animals, and I forget. And I just remember you had one of my braids in your hand, and, like,
I'm so sorry.
No, it was a lot of fun. I just have this visceral memory of, like, to segue back to The Drop, but, like, when you're like, oh, is this the first time you two have worked together? I'm like, oh, wait, like, no, we were animals in theater school.
We, like, brushed by each other.
So cool. Yeah. It was so cool. And here you are both working professionally. And so tell our viewers and listeners, The Drop, I like the name, The Drop, but what is the plot?
Take it away.
Okay. So The Drop is about two really cool Toronto girlies, Polly and Zara. Zara is a newly settling American expat trying to make her life work in in Canada because insulin is cheap, and she's a diabetic. But basically, the two besties wait in line for luxury items on the day that they drop for people who are too rich or lazy to do so themselves. So like, if you want like the newest iPhone, but you don't want to wait in line for it, but you want to be of the first to get it, like you can pay somebody to wait in line for you to get it. And Polly and Zara do that.
Well, yes. And what does line waiter mean for those who may not know?
So it's one of those magical jobs that I think was created because now we live in such a capitalist society where time is like your greatest commodity. And so for a lot of people, they don't have time to wait for things, for their passports to get renewed, to get the latest like dessert trend. And so it's like a real job that you can do. You can sign up on like TaskRabbit and become a line waiter. In our show, at least, it's all offline and it's like a true like cash only scenario. And that's why like my character is able to do it, even though she doesn't have her papers for Canada. But with that, I think it just brings such a different like level of hustler to our characters, because basically these girls are like working for cash and they don't have to pay taxes. And so they make a lot of money really quickly.
Yeah. You know, I was gonna like, how exciting was for you to work on this show? It seems like a lot of fun and it's comedy.
I mean, it was so much fun. We got to hire our friends. We got to cast incredible comedians that we always wanted to work with. Our show has Mark Little in it, who's an incredible comedian now in New York. Aurora Brown, who's one of the creators of Baroness von Sketch. We got to work with Nicole Power, who's like the star of Strays and was previously on Kim's Convenience. So just a dream. Yeah, all levels.
So you're living the dream.
Yeah, we even had a cute little cameo from Jane Kasmarek, who was on Malcolm in the Middle. She played Lois. She was the one that was always like, Malcolm! We had like the tiniest little, she played herself, and it was so fun. And yeah, definitely a highlight is just like how we got really cool people to come out and like be on a part of our vision, which is like, we don't take it lightly. It was a big deal, so yeah. Mm.
You know, what was the process like? It's a lot of work being an actor and producer.
Yeah, I mean, it was a very long process that, I mean, with two people who are as hardworking, honestly, as Aisha and myself, even with all of that, it was super, super hard. But I think we learned a lot because even though it was like the first time that we did something of this scale, it wasn't our first kick at the can as filmmakers. Mm. We had directed ourselves in other projects, written a lot. And you know what they say, two is better than one. But we definitely had everything written like a long time before we went to principal photography. And that was just how it had to be. Like, we didn't have writers waiting on the side of the set being like, make this joke funnier, or we're going to change the scene around. It was kind of, you know, at times like on the fly, but also very structured.
Yeah.
Yes.
We had to have like, it's actually, that's the, like, when you say that, Danny, I think about it. Cause I'm like, oh yeah, because we were the writers. So, like the script, like it sounds glamorous and I'm like, it's not. But we had to, like the script had to be like airtight in many ways. And like, it is kind of hard because we were also trying to be very current to the times, because like with the internet and pop culture, Gen Z kind of vibes, like things move very quickly. And so it just required, like, I think about an amalgamation of processes where like, because you just have like, there's a process to direct something, and then there's a process to play a character in something. And so for the both of us, we would lean on each other, obviously, but there's also an amalgamation of like getting these two kinds of processes to kind of fit into each other while you're working. That might mean like watching playback, or like while you're in the frame, like having them like figure out where they're going to put the camera, and you have the monitor watching them frame you up, you know, where the bodies are in space, like little things like that, like that are, I don't want to say technical, but they're like the minutia, but it was definitely like a lot of hard work and took a lot of time, but we leaned on each other and we played all the parts, basically.
Wow. And what is your comment to say about Generation Z and what are they facing?
Doom.
I think the millennials are worse off. Like, maybe I'll bite my tongue about that. Like, I'm not an economist. Like, nobody take my investment advice. But I would
say, if you're listening, buy a house. She'll tell you how to get one.
But listen to mama. I don't know what to say. Like, I think that I don't even know how to answer this. Aisha, do you have an idea?
I do. I think that, okay, what does this say about Gen Z culture? But I think like millennials and Gen Z are like in a weird space that's kind of like separate from like Gen X and boomers. Mm-hmm. And so in like when we really think about it, like I do understand like the, I don't want to say nihilism, but like kind of anger, because like, yeah, the planet, like there is a problem. There's the climate emergency. Like there are many things that kind of like weren't the same as like, let's say 30 years ago. And so like, just to like kind of maneuver through the workaday world, like you're faced with having to navigate more precarity, if that makes sense. And so yeah. I think in some ways it kind of just speaks to like the hustle culture of like crazy things that people do in order to make ends meet, like that kind of stuff. Like my mom, like she was a nurse from the time she was 22 and like had a house by the time she was 24. And then once upon a time, she came over to my house and I was like 22 and I had like sheets from IKEA. And she was like, why don't you go to the Bay and get yourself something nice? And I was just like,
am I getting married?
Like what? And so I just think like it's a stark difference between the generations in the sense that like we're I think maybe a little bit scrappier, which kind of speaks to Polly and Zara as characters when it comes to like getting the job done, making money. But I also think like a lot more fun, like embracing like, Polly and Zara don't get stuck in like the hardship of what it is to like maybe be a person trying to make their way in the world. They're like just fun, cool, like looking for a good time, looking to make a dollar. And I think that's what makes them relatable, where it's like, yeah, this sucks, but like, let's just try and have a good time. So yeah.
Wow, that's wonderful. You know, and the thing too is that your message to others that can relate. And before we went live, we talked about, you know, you have paving the way for women comedians. How does that feel?
I mean, you don't know you're doing it, you know, but
yeah.
I'm glad that if it's helping anyone. I mean, we've had lots of calls with other people who want to make web series. And so I know that we've been helpful in that regard. So it means a lot.